Welcome to the Championship Sportscast. I'm Kempston Cross. It's just JT and I this week because of some technical difficulties behind the scenes, which caused us to have no Brandon this week. Hopefully we'll have him back for next week. Hopefully you can get the issues resolved. But and actually, we didn't discover it until near the end of the podcast, which makes for kind of a squirrely ending. So hopefully that's fun for you at home. And yeah, without further ado, here's this week's episode. Glad you're with us.
Danger zone.
That's your official, like, greeting. It's like aloha now. But anyway, that and the term child is something you use quite often all of a sudden. But
child, please. Child, please.
Overall, it's been pretty good. It's been a good week. Had a three-day weekend with President's Day, which kind of threw my schedule off a little bit. But it's a short week, so that's good.
I mean, played football on President's Day.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. But it's nice to have a pretty short week going on. Got to watch some cool stuff happen. It was a pretty good time. Just feeding the addiction that is my video game addiction, too. So it's been a great week. Absolutely wonderful week.
Play of the week. Play of the week.
Will we be adding an echo effect to your voice as well with that?
And absolutely.
All of the bass.
Absolutely.
All right.
So, I'm going to kind of cheat here because from my understanding, you guys are both cheating as well. I'm going to pick the entire NBA All-Star game because there were a lot of cool stuff that happened. I think my favorite play that I saw from it was John Wall didn't oop to LeBron where John Wall was going to 360 dunk it, but nope, just ooped it off the backboard and LeBron slammed it down. It was pretty impressive.
Was that the first one or was that? Because LeBron fed Wall at least one time.
There was a lot of. Everybody was feeding everybody. LaMarcus Aldridge.
Well, Russell Westbrook wasn't feeding anybody.
Well, Russell Westbrook hogged the ball, and that was quite impressive, but I don't know. He whiffed on a couple wide open dunks, which was really embarrassing. Jeff Teague was playing full court defense in an all-star game. My first impression was, well, that's just adorable now, isn't it? He thinks he's going to try. But, yeah,
The Atlanta Hawks go full power, okay?
I mean, when you have all four Atlanta Hawks and Kyrie Irving on the court at one point, it's like there's something wrong with this picture, especially when you've got Kyle Korver, who averages 13 points a game.
No, I know. We're
just chilling out there. It's like, what is this? It was,
they're just glad to be there, okay?
I mean, that's what they're going to be saying after they get sent home in the Eastern Conference Finals this year. Well, we were glad to be there. We made it, guys. We really made it.
Well, I mean, they only have like 12 losses or something. But
it was a cool game. It was fun to watch.
Right.
Everybody was doing cool stuff.
Eventually.
LaMarcus Aldridge was shooting threes and just raining them home, and it was just fun to watch. It was a good game. One of the better All-Star games. The dunk contest was good. It was just a good weekend for the NBA, I think.
File mine under the you can't make this up category. Michigan State guard Denzel Valentine hit a game-winning three over Ohio State on Valentine's Day. It was for a 59-56 win, and so that was, I mean, I don't know if it was the coolest play of the weekend, but it was definitely something that caught my eye and made me chuckle at least. And then, I mean, something that really made my week since we've last recorded, though, was the fact that the report came out about Eric Berry being on the right track with his comeback from, or with his fight against Hodgkin lymphoma. And the word came out that he's headed in the right direction, I believe was the quote. I saw it on Bleacher Report, I think it was. And so that was something that it's more serious, but it's definitely something that's seriously exciting because that's he's fighting for his life. So yeah, prayers for him.
Brandon originally mentioned it. What about that show that Zach LaVine put on at the NBA dunk contest?
I mean, the dunk contest is broken by most accounts, but that was really cool to have kind of a coming out party for a young guy in the NBA.
Well, I think the more important thing that came out of it was that it put some energy back in an event that since Vince Carter's epic dunk, and I think it was 2000, on a shaky ground for a while, but now that kind of put some energy in it. LeBron's actually now, it sounds like, talking about maybe doing it next year, which would be cool. So if they could get him and like Russell Westbrook and some of the other guys that are real hesitant to do it, it would be really, really cool. But then again, LeBron, I think, would be amazing to watch in a dunk contest. But guys like Russell, I don't know how I'd feel about it. Because, like, they're real. Like, what they do it in a game, and that's what makes it super cool. They're not, like, the most technically impressive things. But they definitely – it would definitely be cool to get some of the guys that don't want to do it in there and kind of breathe new life into that dunk contest. And I think, especially for LeBron, I think it'd be kind of important because one of the reasons Michael Jordan's remembered as one of the greatest is that free throw line.
If nothing else, it would get people to watch the dunk contest.
Yeah, if nothing else, and it would kind of cement LeBron's legacy too, is because a lot of people he might not win as many championships, might lose in the lose in the finals and stuff. But to a lot of people, LeBron might be a better player, but it's overcoming that legacy for him is going to be really hard. And I'm just speaking in terms of what LeBron's goals are, not wanting to have this greatest of all time debate. But it would be cool.
JT, you said Magic Johnson is a better player than Michael Jordan, even.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to have that.
Well, you're joking.
Well, I'm not joking about the Magic Johnson thing. I firmly believe it. But I think in LeBron's mind, he wants to be the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And he talks all the time about wanting to be better than MJ. So in LeBron's mind, it's MJ. So it's MJ. One of the big things that makes MJ MJ is the dunk contest dunk, that free throw line dunk that is cemented in, you know, is like, it's iconic. It's like the Jerry West pass that's on the Jerry West, you know, that's part of the NBA logo. It's like, it made Jordan an icon.
Right.
And LeBron needs to do something that's going to leave his mark in places. So, you know, 15, 20 years from now, we can be sitting there talking about, well, LeBron was really good. Is he going to be better? I have no idea.
Right.
You know, but this is me speaking from what I think is in LeBron's mind anyway.
Well, and the other thing is MJ had a clutch performance or two. So, but anyway.
Excuse me?
What's...
You talking smack on LeBron not having clutch performances?
No. That wasn't a slam on LeBron. I'm just saying that's part of why MJ is an icon is because his flu game of, you know, hitting a couple big shots, historically big shots. And, like, that's all I'm saying. It's not a slam on LeBron. I'm a LeBron fan. I'm fine with LeBron.
I mean, LeBron is no less clutch than MJ. The only thing LeBron isn't a shooting guard, so he's not built to make those, you know, those clutch shots like that. And LeBron knows to trust his teammates.
Yep.
Yeah. So, because that's...
And that's fine.
LeBron is more Magic Johnson than he is MJ.
I know. I was just kind of, like, interjecting and transitioning,
but... But the way that came out, it was like, okay, and LeBron and MJ hit a couple clutch shots. Oh, okay.
No. I didn't say... that's not what I said, but whatever. Okay.
That is pretty much what you said.
Well, I mean, that's not what I meant.
Okay, at this point, Space Jam was brought up, and... The Space Jam inspired dunk that Zach LaVine threw down at the contest
happened.
Huh? That was influenced by Michael Jordan.
I'm sorry, LeBron.
I thought we were moving on.
LeBron was like 10 years old when that movie came out. I'm sorry.
You don't have to apologize for LeBron. He's the best player in the world currently. Move on. Let's go.
Play of the week. Okay.
Okay. So Robert Griffin III has been named the Redskins starter, and I think it's fitting. It's kind of fitting that the Rams have reportedly been hesitant to move on from Sam Bradford. It seems like both the Redskins and the Rams have the same problem of not moving on from an injury-prone quarterback.
Except one's actually pretty decent and the other one's kind of pretty
big. Well, Sam Bradford's never had a chance to prove
But the thing is, Bradford's been pretty decent when he's been out there. RG3 after his rookie season's been exceedingly
right, but RG3 has not been... I don't know if he's been completely healthy. I doubt he's been completely healthy since the knee injury that happened.
Well, the thing is, I think part of that is... I agree. I'm just saying that I think that given the data and what's been in front of me, I would say Bradford's the better QB and he still has
potential. Yeah, and he was playing the best game, best football of his life before he went down.
Yeah,
last preseason.
Yeah, that's my point. It's just, but I think, I don't know. Anyway, continue.
No, yeah, and I agree with where you're coming from too. It's just that, I mean, RG3 is named the starter, and I mean, it's tough. I mean, the Redskins. Understandably are searching for any kind of stability as a franchise. because just because of the there's a bunch of stuff that just rocks their boat. And so, like, just whether it's on the field stuff, the on the field product, you know, isn't great. The off the field distractions are, it seems like ever mounting the list. And so, I mean, it's as far as naming him the starter, I mean, I don't know. There were a lot of people talking during last year about how Kirk Cousins actually looked better in Jay Gruden's system and whatever. And you were one of them. Yes, JT was one of them. But I mean, and then Colt McCoy looked pretty dang good. Like, well, I mean, not pretty good, but he was serviceable. So, I mean, if the question, I don't know. I mean, I want to see RG3 come back, succeed, and because he's kind of become something of an underdog now, just because, like, I mean, maybe underdog's not the right word for it, but I mean, he's a prime candidate for comeback player of the year, and I just wonder if he's going to always be a prime candidate for comeback player of the year until he just fades out of the league. Well, and I hope that's not the case.
Well, I think RG3's problem is he's stuck in the same spot as D Rose. Like, I think it's a lot of
A lot of parallels, yes.
It's essentially the same situation, except Derrick Rose is in a sport where you are going to have bad nights more frequently than you do it. Because, like, in the NFL, you can't afford to have a bad night, really, at any time, mm-hmm. unless it's during preseason lock into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You can't afford to have a bad night. Where right. in the NBA, you kind of can. And you're playing so many games that you can get your footing back right. a lot easier. But the thing is look at what's going on. D Rose came back. You know, it's taken a lot longer than anticipated, and D Rose is looking maybe not exactly where he was, but he's damn close.
Never be the same.
Oh, I think he could be. I think watching him now, if this improvement continues and they don't, and this is a big if too, mm-hmm. the Bulls can't go super far in the playoffs for this to happen this year because it's too much stress on his body. Just to be kind of getting to where he needs to be. But if they get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, I think D Rose could come back next year and continue that process and be back to old D Rose. Because I've watched a couple games this year where I've said to myself, D Rose looks like D Rose. And then there's been games where I've said D Rose doesn't look like old school D Rose. Mm. He looks more like how people feel about like Kobe Bryant just shooting this year, taking lots of horrendous shots. But I guess the thing is here is that you've got a guy that super injury prone, comes back, does really well. Mm-hmm. RG3 can do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Granted, football is a lot more of a physical sport.
Right.
And that's going to come down to can you protect him. Well, and
he's kind of got to change his playing style too, because he was trucking linebackers in a preseason game last August.
I mean,
he's built like a track star. Like, one of the biggest things about him is the fact that his body is just not built to take a huge beating.
Yeah.
He's not. I mean, that's not just a concern. I mean, it's a fact. So, I mean, all three of the Redskins starters are better options than anything on the free agent market. Maybe Brian Hoyer, maybe Mark Sanchez. Well, it
depends on what happens with those two guys too, because I know I was reading somewhere that it sounds like the Browns are interested in keeping Hoyer.
That would be a good move, I think.
And I think they should have gone with him the entire 16 game. Eagles might be looking at keeping Mark Sanchez because
there's nothing out there.
Well, there's a,
even in the draft.
Well, this is, and we'll get. I guess I'll make this point here in a second when we get to our next guy on our list here. If the Eagles keep Mark Sanchez, you could try and trade for Nick Foles if they decide to go the. Because there are people out there that make the argument that if you gave Mark Sanchez the same amount of time as Nick Foles in that offense, he's going to do a lot better than Nick Foles will. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. I don't know if I necessarily would see it as a good move, but there are people out there that make that argument. So I wouldn't be shocked if Mark Sanchez gets snatched up. So they've got to do something, because RG3... I don't know if he's their answer right now. If it was me, if I'm that owner, I'd take a step back and say, let's try somebody else out for the first couple weeks of the season and rest RG3 too. just keep him, rest him.
Well, that depends on
it does depend on a lot. It depends on if you can get somebody. But if you can keep him rested and healthy, and if this other guy doesn't work out, then you can get him in there, and then it's like week four, and maybe he's, you know, it's not having not been through training camp and then preseason, and then first couple weeks of the year, maybe he having that time off could help keep him healthy.
Or like, he could not truck linebackers.
Well, the thing is, though, is that...
or try, attempt to.
Well, the thing is that what's going to get it? Did that get him hurt? What got him hurt?
No, specifically what got him hurt was he was scrambling and he stepped on his ankle wrong against the Jaguars.
Exactly. So trucking linebackers and stuff, him being on the field makes him an injury risk to himself at that point. Like, the thing is that if he's out there, he's at an injury risk. And it's like, because he's already put stress on his body, that rest will help his body recover and make it less likely that that happens. But at the same time, I don't know. It's a tough situation for him. It really is. And I don't know what they're going to do about it. I would go, you know, I would look elsewhere. But the thing is there's nobody, unless you draft somebody, which I don't know of anybody other than Mariota and Winston right now that I look at in this draft that I'm like, they're NFL caliber quarterbacks. And I guess, I don't know. But do you guys have anything else about RG3?
Nope. But the free agent market is a lot better than the quarterback position at the wide receiver position. Well, so, and one wide receiver never even hit the market.
Well, and this is the thing is that Fitzgerald never hit the market.
Larry Fitzgerald, yeah, Larry to the Cardinals is what we're talking about.
Re-signed to the Cardinals. And this is kind of the thing is, and this was the overarching point I was going to make about quarterbacks anymore with RG3 too, is that good and great players are less likely to be on the market anymore, especially because they become faces of an organization, and Larry Fitzgerald is one of them. When, you know, if a lot of people, when you say the Arizona Cardinals, one of the first names that comes to mind is Larry Fitzgerald.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure he was on the cover of Madden. Yep. When they won the Super Bowl, or when they played
in the Super Bowl.
When they went to it. He's just, he's the face of that franchise, and that's kind of the thing here, is that quarterbacks in on offense in particular, the only real defensive player that I would say is a face of a franchise is really J.J. Watt is the only, and maybe some of the guys.
Maybe
the Seahawks,
maybe Kukli.
And Cam Newton, I would still argue, is the face of the
Panthers. No, he definitely is, but he's a key leader on
there. Yeah, but I would say like maybe the Seahawks with, I could see Sherman and some of their guys. The argument could be made, but I think J.J. Watt's the only sole defensive player that's the face of that of a franchise right now in the NFL that, like, you can pinpoint and say he is that guy. Yeah. Because Arian Foster...
Well, hopefully he's the face of the NFL.
Yeah, he should be. But the thing is your quarterbacks and your wide receivers and your running backs, if you're super, super good, they're going to try and keep you around because they're the face of the franchise.
Right, and... I think I can't be the only one that's glad that Carolina-Arizona playoff wildcard game last year is the last we'll see of Larry Fitzgerald in a Cardinals uniform. He deserves to go out better than that. I don't know that there's much debate that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. If you're a franchise icon for nearly a decade, then I think you're probably headed for the Hall.
Oh yeah, he will be. His numbers
numbers, of course, yeah,
are really good too. So it's, I think.
Well, yeah, and they're totally, and they're in some cases totally mishandling the log jams they already have built up and are building even more up. So.
Well, that's just the problem. Is there's been in the last, it seems like in the last like 20 years, there's been so many players that are Hall of Fame worthy that it's like there's been, I was reading an article on like ESPN about it that was, they're saying that there's like this crazy influx of Hall of Fame caliber players in like the last 20 years that they didn't really see before that. Whether that's because the game has grown to a point where they're, you know, players are developing faster at a younger age or what it is or what's really going on. But it's that there's like, as time goes on, more and more, there's more and more of them, it seems like, that are Hall of Fame caliber players.
Well, to become Hall of Fame caliber, you and to even get drafted by a franchise, much less be an icon, you got to start somewhere. And part of that beginning process is the NFL Combine, which is taking place this week. The measurements are taken, measurements and interviews and Wunderlich tests, I believe, are taken the first couple days, which we're still in the midst of. And then I think drills begin tomorrow with the widely recognized skill positions, quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs. And we've kind of talked about that already, but something that has come out is I believe Mariota and Winston both are going to throw at the combine. So that'll be interesting. And
time out for a second.
What?
So let's back up. Besides the fact that they're both going to throw at the combine, they took their measurements on, I believe it was
yesterday. They were
literally the same, except Winston outweighed Mariota by like 9 pounds. Like they were
like height and weight. Height?
Yeah, their height was measured identical. It came back identical from what I was reading earlier today. And their weight, like they were off between somewhere between like 5 and 9 pounds, which was crazy because Winston's losing weight. And is, right, like, trying to get down and get ready to be able to, I guess, either compete at the combine or this is a permanent thing. But it's really interesting because, I mean, we never would have realized anything like that without it.
Right.
And I think this is shaping up to be one of the – a quarterback duel at this for the next – up until the
– Well, of course it's going
to be. To the draft until, you know, for which one goes number one.
Especially since they're the only two starting caliber quarterbacks in this draft at this point.
Yeah, and I that's the way I see it, is that they're the only two that are really starting quarterback caliber. It just depends on what you want to do. And I think there's big pluses and there's big minuses to both of them. Even, I mean, Mariota is a bit bigger of a gamble in terms of the scheme situation, but the thing is
the efficiencies.
The efficiency. Well, like, the thing is, like, I draw this parallel kind of to, he's like a mashup between, name me a really good running quarterback. Say Russell Wilson. Let's take Russell Wilson because he's quick. He runs the ball, makes good decisions. And he's also kind of got a bit of that Aaron Rodgers vibe to him, too, where he doesn't throw interceptions. His ball accuracy is not perfect, but he makes good decisions in the pocket. Whereas Winston, but the thing is, Mariota came from like a spread West Coast style of offense, which doesn't really, college style anyway, that doesn't really transfer to the NFL. And the thing is, with Winston, it's kind of his system's more NFL ready, so to speak, and more NFL caliber. But the big red flag with him, and I don't think there's much of a debate about this, is, well, besides maybe his off the field stuff, but his biggest on the field problem is bad decisions, because you should not only have 7 more touchdowns than interceptions.
A lot of the picks were to his very young receiving core,
right?
Last year, like when he went to his veterans like O'Leary, Rashad Green, like in big games when he needed a play, that's where he would go. And so, I mean, everybody remembers the big the play where he was he looked like he was fumbling on roller skates in the Rose Bowl, and like that. But that shouldn't be the symbol of Jameis Winston as
going
into the draft. And I mean,
I get what you're saying.
Well, though. I do get what you're saying.
Okay, so my point here is, though, is that you might want to say, well, he was throwing to young receivers. Okay, if you want to use the – and I've used this argument before, and we're going to jump back to the Aaron Rodgers thing this year, is that then by that logic, Aaron Rodgers either only ever threw 2 or 3 interceptions all year because his receivers screwed up.
That's not the same thing. Cause...
Well, no, time out. But basically what you're saying is, though, is that, well, he's throwing you young, inexperienced wide receivers, and that's what led to the interception. Well, you still don't throw 17 interceptions and only 25 touchdowns and have, you know, for that number, for me personally, to still be something that to me is not a red flag, would need to be below 10, which means 7 or more of them had to be on the wide receiver. And I don't know if I buy that many of them. That's essentially is that
scouts are saying, like scouts that I follow and trust have said that that's the case.
So. Well, but the problem is, though, is that in that case, then if you're saying, if you know you're having problems with your receivers, that's a problem where you're forcing turnover or interceptions when you go that direction.
It's a problem to have good anticipation.
Well, then stop throwing to those receivers. Stop throwing to those receivers.
What he did when he needed a big play, is what I'm saying.
Well, but the thing is, then you fail to make those adjustments, and you're throwing 17 interceptions in a game.
Well, Matt Ryan had what, 31 touchdowns, but 19 interceptions in his senior year at Boston College, and he was a top 5, top 10 pick.
Yeah, you went there, but I'm saying, all I'm saying is it's a red flag to me, and you're trying to basically play it off that it's not a big deal and fault, because that is the single biggest problem with Jameis Winston on the field is his decision making. When you're throwing that many interceptions, if you're looking to those young receivers throwing the ball and it gets picked off, okay, sure, after the first cut, after you realize, okay, that receiver isn't where he's supposed to be, you need to look elsewhere and stop throwing the ball all the time over there and forcing that thing to happen, because in the end, it still has to leave the quarterback's hand. You know, you don't have to keep targeting those young receivers when that keeps happening.
I would say it's more of a yellow flag than a red.
It is the biggest on-the-field problem with him.
There's a couple that are absolutely terrible. Like, there's one just came to my mind from the Notre Dame game that he was, like, literally being tackled and threw it over the middle for no reason.
Yeah.
And it got picked off.
Well, yeah. That's
right. And I totally see where you're coming from, is my point. Somehow I always get thrust into the role of defending Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and people on this program. But
the thing is that I'm not saying that, like,
even though they're not my favorite. I would take Mariota over Winston because of the character and decision-making and efficiency and everything like that. But the thing is, Winston's getting comparisons to Ben Roethlisberger. Mariota is getting comparisons to Alex Smith. Alex Smith is serviceable, but he's not Ben Roethlisberger.
I mean,
like, so if you're going to look at it that way, I mean, I totally agree that Mariota's efficiency, Mariota's on-the-field decision-making is superior. His intangibles are superior. But Winston, as you alluded to earlier as well, is the more pro ready prospect, and that is why this is such a tantalizing debate leading up to the draft.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah, it did. But here's one thing I do have to say, as well, is that if Mariota didn't get hurt last year,
National Championship
game? No, the year before.
Oh, the year before.
2 years ago, I guess. Now.
Oh, okay.
Mariota probably would have won a Heisman that year. He was playing insanely good football.
Oh yeah. Before he indirectly threw the game away against Arizona. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it was the year that they lost to Stanford, and that kept them out of making the.
Yeah, that was two years ago.
Yeah,
by now.
But Mariota got hurt that year. Mm-hmm.
Knee, I think it was.
Yeah, and that cost his that killed his Heisman chances, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that and so the thing is that if Mariota stayed healthy, I bet Winston probably didn't get a Heisman Trophy had he not gotten hurt. Mariota was on a, I mean, I'm saying that was, like, he was having a pretty good season. But anyway, the other thing here is too is that I guess my one other argument here is, because I'm going to play devil's advocate just for the sake of doing it, is the fact is that Mariota has things that are better that can't be taught. Like, decision-making and things can be kind of worked on, but Mariota does a lot of things that are really tough to teach, where you can fix a throwing motion and all that other stuff. It can be improved, but teaching better decision-making is insanely difficult. So, but that's the last I've got to say about that.
Right. That'll be interesting to watch, because the fact that Mariota is throwing at the combine should have a positive effect on his draft stock, because what the combine is for is not necessarily to demonstrate what we talked about before with the anticipation with the receivers. You're throwing to these guys that you may have met like 24 hours before, so it's more about footwork and arm strength and mechanics and such, and so that's really what Mariota will be dissected on at the combine. But anyway, so as far as we move, so we're going to probably kind of move on. And, you know, none of us actually covered this with any of our, like, coolest plays of the week or anything. But last night there was what people are calling an instant classic at the college basketball level. As we hit March, we're getting into the home stretch here towards the national tournament in the NCAA basketball. And classic rivalry, instant classic, people are calling it. Duke, North Carolina. Go. You guys watched it. I didn't catch it.
I caught it. Well, I guess the biggest thing, it's the first takeaway besides how good this game was, is Chahil Okafor is a monster.
Yeah.
He backs people down better than any big man I have ever seen in my life. It was insane. Because in overtime, he came out, backed a dude down, and just like they went off in overtime. Duke went off in overtime. It was great. And it was like they were throwing, especially the end of regulation. So let's start there because that's where I really picked up and started paying a lot of attention. There's a bad call on somebody on Duke. I don't remember who it was at the end of the fourth quarter, at the end of the second half. And I thought Duke is done. They're down by like 4 points at this point and not good, not looking good. So Duke gets the ball. They get up the court and they end up scoring pretty easily. And then some crazy stuff happens. They send North Carolina to the line. The guy makes one, score again. And it just got crazy. Like the end of that game was insane. The end of regulation, because I thought that that game was over. I was convinced that that game was over because Duke's down. They're not going to be able to pull it out. And by some small miracle, they pulled it out and they're going into overtime. And then in overtime, it turned into just like it was back and forth all of overtime. And then just North Carolina tried to score and missed. And then that's what really put Duke out there so that way they could claim the lead to finally win.
And the reaction that I saw was it was a demonstration of the medal that the March medal that the Duke Blue Devils are going to need down the stretch to make a run at the Final Four and the national championship and everything like that. And it's not shocking that a Coach K coached team shows that to me, but yeah, that's what I heard about it.
Well, my other big takeaway from it is that there's a freshman that, I can't think of his name that plays for Duke. I think his last name might've been, not Okafor. Trust me. I could talk in my head. I pay a lot of attention to Okafor because I know I'm about convinced he's gonna be the he's gonna be something special. And I guess it was Tyus Jones is I guess who I was thinking of. I knew his last name was Jones. I just didn't know what his first name was. He's a freshman and he put up 22 points and had an absolutely impressive performance and really came through in the clutch and played really well. And that's the thing with a Coach K coach team is that there are very few other coaches that can get a freshman out there to make plays and do this impressive stuff that was going on. They were setting ball screens that were like some of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. It's like the floor is spaced out and then they set this screen and it just is like nobody, like they've got the defense completely fooled. Like crazy stuff is happening, which was awesome. And then after the game, they did an interview with Jones, and he actually says, like, basically the effect of, like, I was not playing well at the beginning of the second half, and it was because of my teammates. And, like, three guys, as they walked by, all, like, just grabbed him and gave him a huge hug. He's like, we love you, brother. And it's like, wait, what? Like, that's not something you hear coming out of NBA players, out of professional athletes, ever. And that's the most impressive thing is it's like, that team is a team and like a brotherhood to the extreme that they understand. And this is like the beauty of what Coach K does is that they've got this system that the players connect on such a level that they don't have to be selfish. Okafor only had 12 points. I bet you could feed even though apparently they were doubling him for most of the game, which
makes sense.
Which they stopped doing going into overtime, which I think was a huge mistake. Mm. If it was the NBA, you don't have to double Okafor because a lot of guys could probably play defense. But they quit doing it. But that team is like the way they work together and the way that cohesion is a unit, and you can see it in watching them play, is incredible. That if you could get an NBA team to do that and to get to that level,
that's an accomplishment.
Scariness would happen because I don't care how good they are, that team, because one of the biggest things is you can take a mediocre team in basketball and if you can get them to move the ball and kick the ball around, create ball movement, play an offense that is unselfish basketball, aka basically all that the Spurs do, and it's going to be scary because that's what Greg Popovich does. They take mediocre players, and other than Ginobili, Parker, and Duncan, other than the fact that Duncan Morse is the only
Kawhi
one.
Kawhi is mediocre?
No, timeout.
Okay.
Let me back up. Kawhi in the last couple years is in this conversation, but the only one of those players I would argue, a lot of people think Ginobili and Parker are like transcendent players. I disagree. Tim Duncan is the only one of those that is actually like a transcendent, like a amazing player. Like he is special. Tony Parker is made great by that system, and he's embraced it and turned himself into a great player. And I have mad respect for Tony Parker. I just don't think he's as great as a lot of people think he is. But the thing is that the way Duke captures that Spurs-like mentality of selfless basketball and basically condenses it into something that's all it is. It's selfless, brotherhood-based basketball, and it was incredible. It's incredible to watch. And they do it every time I've watched Duke this year. That's been the takeaway for me, is that they don't care. They might have a wide-open three-pointer, but they move the ball. Where other teams, they're shooting that three, and it's why Duke is going to beat you, because they don't settle for it. They look for the smart, high-percentage looks, and it's incredible. It was an instant classic. Plus, both teams got together before the game and did like a circle, and they had a giant moment of silence for Coach Dean Smith.
That's
and that
really
was
cool.
And it was like, I'm going to kind of steal Keith Olbermann's thunder. There are very few times where you actually get moments of silence, because you always have that one guy that's phone's going off,
thinks
or is
he's
talking
funny or whatever. Yeah.
That place was not a peep.
Good.
And it was, it's one of those things that sends shivers down your spine. Mm-hmm. It's super impressive.
And now we transition to reports of Blake Griffin's doctor saying that his elbow looks even better than expected.
Good.
Well, I mean, you just spoke about how in the NBA it's so important to have your stars. And to succeed, you have to have all your stars healthy and gelling and able to maximize each other. And so this is good, very good news for the Clippers, because then they can get one of their stars back.
They needed him really bad. Need him back really bad. They've hardly played without him, but I don't foresee things going well without Balake.
Oh.
Because they're going to be in some serious trouble. They don't have the pieces. I don't think last year they had the pieces to win the title. If it wasn't for that whole Donald Sterling thing, I think the Clippers could have won it all.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had the pieces, because they had Danny Granger, who was an absolute stud. I mean, they got him.
Now he's a son or something? Yeah, like, what happened at the deadline?
He's floating in the ether, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But he was good. Because he at one point was a star player. Mm-hmm. Like, he was really good when he was with the Pacers.
Yeah. And
so it's like, biggest problem is that I don't think they have the pieces to do it. I think Golden State's too good. I think there are other teams in the West that are too good. But the sooner they get him back, the sooner they can get that cohesion back and back to being the Clippers they were, and maybe make a title push. Because if they don't get him back, I could see them not making the playoffs. Like, it's, and I've said that before, I wouldn't doubt it. So they need him back, and because he's huge. He's just as big of a leader to that team, I think, as Chris Paul is. And he's, I would almost argue, more important, just because the way he gets in the position and spreads the floor, because he's a big man that can shoot and he can dunk. And nobody wants to end up on his poster.
we will get in depth on the NBA trade deadline and the frenzy that was all the details will come out over the next week. We figure we'll be able to give a better product on that next week, as opposed to this week. But yeah, so Melo had surgery, and we already got your opinion on the fact that he was not playing he was going to shut himself down after the All-Star game. But it's official now that the knee surgery that he got ends his season. I think we kind of have your thoughts on that, yeah?
Well, the thing is that Melo is now the second player in NBA history. I don't know who the first is, but I was watching ESPN last night. They talked about it, that he is the second player in NBA history to play in the All-Star game and never play another game the rest of the season.
Besides Magic Johnson.
I might have been.
No, that is, yeah. If I remember correctly, let me double check.
Because I think that might have been...
Well, yeah, like, I saw that, like, cold hard fact on Bleacher Report.
Carmelo is a top 10 player, probably. I actually beg to differ for different reasons. But most people you talk to will say Carmelo Anthony is a top 10 player, top 5 if you really want to get generous. Because in a lot of people's minds it goes LeBron, KD, Anthony Davis, probably Carmelo, and then there's a few others that are kind of in that, like, insanely good mix.
First since Magic, 91.
Yeah, I wonder what happened. I'm curious. Was that the year? Let's look.
He played in the All-Star game, but did not play in the regular season after. I'm curious what
happened.
Yeah. It's
Magic Johnson. Oh.
Oh, that would be it.
That would be exactly.
That makes sense.
That's kind
that was his retirement. He retired because of the HIV thing.
So, okay, this is what happened. I remember what happened now. He retired and still got voted to the All-Star game. So he played as a symbolic thing, but it was kind of...
That's... Okay, okay. Yeah. This makes... Yeah, this all makes sense now.
Yeah. That I was like... Because it's like, I remember reading something about this that makes it weird. Because my problem with the way Melo handled it is not... is completely different than the way everything happens with Magic Johnson.
Oh, totally, that's totally.
Those are like polar black and white opposites, completely.
No, there's no comparison whatsoever.
Yeah.
Really, there's nothing. It's zero, just yeah. It's just a random Magic, stat.
Magic Johnson was the ultimate competitor.
Yeah.
Carmelo just wants his money.
And that is JT's entire opinion on Carmelo Anthony.
No, actually, If you want to boil it down, that is it. Because
yeah.
Carmelo seeks money and not to win. Because if you look at if this would have been Kobe Bryant last offseason going from like Kobe in his prime, Kobe would not have stayed with the Knicks. He would have gone somewhere else
to win.
That is Kobe Bryant. Mm-hmm. That's old Kobe Bryant. New Kobe Bryant's like whatever. I'll just take the money because I want to retire a Laker because that's different. Like that is a. That's a completely different situation because at this point you're not going to go anywhere and, you know, be that star player and be what Kobe wants to be.
Yep. So, okay. Real quick. Amare Stoudemire. Well, he left the Knicks and he cleared waivers and then signed with the Mavericks. What's the effect on the outlook
Big
in the
whoop.
West?
That's right. As far as I'm concerned. It doesn't really matter.
That was quick.
It's cool. It's cool that he signed with the Mavericks.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, but I don't think it really makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. I think the Mavericks were good, and they're going to continue to be good. So, yeah.
At this point, Amare to the Clippers was brought up.
I think the Clippers' problems are... the thing is, Amare is not Amare from several years ago, where... Amare was great, was a really, really good, was one of those really, really good players, and he's just not there anymore, and that's all there is to it, and I think he'll be fine, but the thing is, I think the Clippers' problems run more in the fact that their backup bigs aren't good enough to cut it. And the other thing is I think they're having some cohesion problems with Doc Rivers and some of what's going on there. I've been reading that they're not playing as a team a lot of times, which isn't good. But the thing is they need to get some backup, young backup big men who will fit in that system, mm-hmm. who want to dunk the ball, who want to get flashy, who want to, you know, just be Lob City all over again.
Right.
And be there and want to fit into that locker room mentality, and I don't know if Amare would have done that. He's good, but I just don't think he's not what the Clippers need. They need younger, good guys.
And reports were that the Clippers were trying really hard to get in on the frenzied NBA trade deadline market, but they I don't know if they were successful. We'll explore that next week.
Well, I think
again, part of the technical difficulties where we couldn't hear Brandon, and so at this point he was talking about the Suns.
Yeah, and they were very active at the trade deadline, and we'll go into that
and
next week.
I have one thing to say about the Suns. What the hell are you doing?
And we'll leave it there and pick it up next week.
So speaking of...
That's called a tease, kids.
Yeah, so we'll talk about... So if you want to speak about teasing and what the hell is going on, let's talk about the
testing.
Let's talk about the UFC and their new drug testing protocol that yesterday they held a press conference for those who missed it, and... discussing what their plans are after several of the high-profile fighters getting caught with PEDs and other...
Several or almost all?
Banned substances. Not almost all.
Okay, I'm just wondering. No, I'm wondering.
Weidman's clean.
It was a question.
DJ's clean. Aldo is clean.
It was a question.
Pettis is clean.
McGregor?
Yeah, well, McGregor's not there. He's not a superstar yet, so you're not in that conversation
until
you win and defend a belt.
They're trying to push him
multiple
there.
At least. Well, I mean, he's at pay-per-view stardom, but he's not good enough to be a superstar yet. And by that, he hasn't proven it.
It was just a question, really, is all it was. I wasn't trying to take jabs or anything.
So, but anyway.
So how's it sound?
So,
what's up?
To me, it sounds like this has been, I've kind of thought when I listened to this that I've heard this before, that they'd been talking about doing this for a while.
Oh.
That basically.
I thought we were talking about baseball again.
No. Well, I mean, we can talk about baseball.
No.
But the thing is that what's going on now in the UFC is they're going to start all main events, or all fighters are going to get drug tested when they fight. That is confirmed. They're going to get drug tested the night they enter competition. And I think they're also, they made it sound like they might test all of them before the fight as well, when they're still technically in competition, which is like when you're actively training for a fight. When you have a fight booked, you're training and all that stuff. That's called being in competition. Being out of competition is when you're training and don't have a fight signed, essentially, is what this boils down to. So they're going to start drug testing everybody, and they're going to put up a ton of money to do it, which I think, okay, fine. That part works. That, I don't know if it'll cut down on it, because what about out of competition, which we'll get to in a minute. So they're going to start drug testing everybody. Okay, great idea, good plan. They should have been doing this a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And why this? But they're also going to start trying to get their tests done and back sooner, so we don't run into the Anderson Silva thing. Because Dana White actually said if they had caught Anderson before the fight, it had gotten the results before the fight, it would have they'd have pulled him off the card, because they're not going to let anybody on PEDs walk in an octagon. Which I completely agree with.
So does Ronda Rousey.
Well, that's, and so does Chris Weidman. And
right.
There's countless
GSP,
guys.
Yeah.
Well, there's countless of them out there. Like Chris Weidman put out one of the funniest tweets I've read in a while, because it sounds like something I would say. He's like, "Thank God for the new drug testing protocol. Now I know when I walk in the octagon, I'll be fighting a normal human being." Which is that kind of reminds me of something I would say.
Uh-huh.
So.
At this point in the conversation, the stat was thrown out that there's going to be almost 1,000 tests per year under the new drug system for the UFC.
Will be more than that, I guarantee it, because they already have been running in the last 2 years. They basically made it sound like there might be well upwards of 1,200 or more, depending on how this second part of this works. Oh, yeah, and the UFC is going to pay for most of it. Well, they've got the money to do it, and they need to do it, because
right.
It's going
to
cost them more
revenue.
Well,
yeah, there's no question they need to do it.
Yeah, if they don't do it. Well, the question is, they could not do it and be fine. Like, they could they could not do it in a vacuum where the public doesn't care. They could get away and let people do whatever they want.
Right.
Because people aren't going to question the legitimacy of the sport. It's
right.
The fact that people will
but
question.
But they don't want to become a...
They don't want to become the WWE.
A joke,
and
yeah.
Be a joke full of juice heads that are just in a cage beating the crap out of each other. It's entertainment. It's not...
Yeah, yeah. It's... And yeah, like you say, it's in popular culture that WWE is, you know...
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean... So, but the thing is so... They're
so they're fair game.
So they're
going
to start testing all their fighters... before their fights, which is good, because they have 585 guys on the roster. If they're fighting two or three times a year each, you're looking at almost 1,500 drug tests. Plus, they're going to start doing random out-of-competition tests. And this is where this actually works for me, because If you get guys that are out of competition doing, which would be the time to do steroids, and you get randomly tested, that would, you're going to get caught. And the fact of the matter is that Dana White came out and said, and they all said that they want to move between, if you get caught with performance enhancing drugs, facing between a 2 and 4 year ban. Because, and this is the logic behind it, is that if you take a fighter, he fights, say, twice a year, and you give him a 9-month ban, that might be one fight. It could be two fights, but it would likely be, for most people, probably one.
Especially with the current
deal. The way it works is that, with the way, I mean, that would be huge, right? A 2 to 4 year ban, for some fighters, is career ending. So basically, if you get caught, you're screwed. The thing is that the UFC is taking steps to catch offenders and is going to do their best to make it so that way if you do this, you're screwed. And I completely and utterly agree with it.
Yep.
Because this is a huge image thing. And that's the last thing to cover here, I guess, besides this, is they announced a couple huge things at this press conference yesterday. Is that they are throwing fights up left and right out of, like, so May 23rd, mm-hmm. we've got John Jones versus Anthony Rumble Johnson,
yep.
Chris Weidman versus Vitor,
yep.
Cowboy versus Khabib, which is,
whoa, this is all
on the same card, time. And it's like Travis Brown versus somebody else too on that card.
I've heard of like all these guys.
I can't think. And John Moraga versus, I'm just gonna pull up the fight card because I can.
Well, what about the two cards that we have to get?
This is actually important, though. Okay. And then, it's Travis Brown versus Andre Arlovski, Joseph Benavidez versus John Moraga. That card is stacked. And then they came out and announced that in July, being the backup fight to Jose Aldo and Connor, you've got Robbie Lawler versus Rory McDonald. And then they came out and said June 13th in Mexico, Cain Velasquez versus Fabricio Verdum. It's getting crazy because all of this controversy between the drugs, between everybody getting hurt, has lit a fire under the UFC's rear end, and they are throwing up crazy.
They're actually responding.
Like, this fight in UFC, like, my birthday is in June, and I plan on telling my parents, let's go to this fight in like, the one in Vegas, this John Jones card, because it's crazy. Like, this is stacked. Like, this is what they need to be doing. I want to see this, not necessarily two championship fights at every card, but I want to look at this and be like, wow, that main event's awesome. That co-main event is awesome. I mean, like, four of these five fights on this main card are insane. This lightweight fight looks like it could be pretty good, but Islam Makhachev versus Leo Kuntz. I've always struggled to pronounce that guy's name, so I apologize for butchering
great
it.
Name.
But it is like, okay, here we go. Let's throw down and let's go, which is exactly what the UFC needs to be doing. So, speaking of throwing down, let's talk about the results from Saturday night's fights on Fox Sports 1. And just to keep it kind of short and sweet, we will just cover the main card. So, the big fight of the night was obviously Benson Henderson defeating Brandon Thatch. He submitted him in the fourth round via a rear naked choke. It was really, the first two rounds were all Brandon Thatch, and then the third and the fourth were all Benson Henderson. Benson definitely, in the first two rounds, you could see that his reach was bugging him because he's not tall enough and he doesn't have length. It doesn't have the length that Brandon Thatch does. And he was getting hit really hard. And you could tell that Benson kind of felt a little small. But then in the third and the fourth, Benson started getting takedowns and dealing some hardcore punishment and then ultimately submitted it in the fourth. It was a pretty good fight overall. Benson called out Rory McDonald, which is obviously not going to happen now because he's fighting Robbie Lawler. Benson actually did then come out and say that, well, now he's actually debating staying at middleweight. Or welterweight. He might actually stay, even though I think he'll drop back down the lightweight because I just don't think he's big enough. I think you stick him in a cage with a guy like that's built like
that's on the upper end of the spectrum,
like Robbie or Johnny Hendricks. He's going to be in some serious trouble. Like, he's just not big enough.
Get himself hurt.
No, he wouldn't.
Like bad.
Well, he wouldn't get. I don't know if he'd necessarily get himself hurt. He would just get messed up. Like, he wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't want to fight Johnny Hendricks. Like, Johnny Hendricks and Robbie Lawler hit hard, and they're built like trucks.
And that's what I mean. Is he?
And Benson Henderson is built like a toothpick. If you see what I did there. So to enlighten people like Kempson's, Benson Henderson is notorious for putting a toothpick in his mouthpiece.
Oh, right, right, right. Okay. Now that you reminded me.
So it was a really clever joke. I was really proud of that one, and then it just kind of – Brandon gets it, and Kemp's is just like, huh? I'm kidding, because like a mouthpiece that we would probably wear is not as good as those mouthpieces that those fighters wear. They stay in there something fierce. Mm-hmm. Like, that toothpick's not going anywhere, especially if...
Well, but the toothpick thing... I know of someone who fell on a toothpick and had an instant staph infection in their knee and needed surgery for it. So I don't know how smart it is to go into a UFC octagon with a toothpick in your mouth.
Benson Henderson's a tough guy and is going to do
what... I understand
he,
that.
He's going to do what he does. It's not the end of the world.
I understand that.
Max Holloway defeated Cole Miller by unanimous decision. That fight had a lot of controversy. There was actually Holloway appeared to headbutt him, if this is the fight I'm thinking it is, that there was a headbutt involved. And Holloway, after the cut to Cole Miller, really was able to turn it around and capture that fight. So that fight was actually pretty good. Neil Magny defeated Keiichi Kunimoto by rear naked choke. That was a good fight. It happens. And then Dan Kelly defeated Patrick Walsh. That fight, actually, I don't agree with the 30-27 by that unanimous decision, but that was an all right fight. Kevin Lee and Michael Prezeres. Kevin Lee wins by unanimous decision. That fight was scrappy and was a battle, so that was a fun one to watch. And Ray Borg defeated Chris Cletus by a Kimura in the third round, and that was pretty
JT trails off at the end there to let Brandon speak, who we had coming in over Skype through our headphones, but that would pretty much do it for our review of UFC Fight Night 60, and we would then transition to UFC Fight Night 61, which takes place this weekend. We started our UFC Fight Night 61 preview with the main event, Antonio Bigfoot Silva going against Frank Mir. And we asked JT for his pick.
Well, I'm going to take Bigfoot because I think Frank Mir, it's about time he hangs it up. I'm starting to think that. I really think that fight is going to be, I don't know. I don't know about this one. I'm looking at Frank Mir's record right now because I'm curious. Okay, Frank Mir is on a 4-straight loss streak to Alistair Overeem, Josh Barnett, Daniel Cormier, and Junior Dos Santos. None of them are slouches. The last guy he lost to that I would argue is a slouch might be Shane Carwin, because at that time, though, Shane Carwin was at his peak, so probably not. I mean, none of them are slouches, but at the same time, after he beat Lesnar the first time, or beat Lesnar, I guess, he's never really been the same. And it's just been, I don't know, I just think it's time. And I think it's the same thing for Bigfoot, that it's time. And none of the guys in the heavyweight division are slouches. A lot of times it just comes down to who lands the big bomb first.
The UFC Fight Night 61 co-main event is a lightweight matchup of Edson Barboza versus Michael Johnson.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a good fight. Well, I like Edson Barboza. I think he's really good. Michael Johnson was on The Ultimate Fighter, if I'm not mistaken. He was on GSP's team, if I remember correctly. And he's pretty good. I would have liked to have seen Edson Barboza fight a guy that's higher up in the rankings. Like, I think the fight I want to see is Benson Henderson versus Edson Barboza. See, that's the fight to make right there. Because then it gives the young guy a chance at a guy that is now basically a gatekeeper, because Henderson's lost to Rafael Dos Anjos, lost to Cowboy, and then obviously has lost twice to Pettis. And I'm sorry, Benson, I like you, I really do. I don't think there's any chance that he will be able to beat Anthony Pettis. Anthony Pettis, I think, is just better at everything other than maybe wrestling that Benson is good at. And so I think Benson's kind of just stuck. So that would be a good fight to make.
In the middleweight division, we have Cesar Ferreira versus Sam Alvey.
I've seen both these guys fight. My money's on Cesar, but I am not 100% sure. I could see it going either way. Good fight. I really think so.
Next up, a lightweight matchup featuring Rustam Khabilov and Adriano Martins.
Yeah, that'll be a good fight too. My money's on Khabilov. He's really good. I like him. Yeah, I think that'll be a good fight. Then we've got Lurie Alcantara versus Frankie. I've never heard that. Sands, yeah. I've like these two guys I've never heard of, and I watch a lot of UFC. Oh, it's that guy. Okay. Yeah, there we go. Okay. I know who he is now. Okay. Yeah, and then Santiago, and I'm not even going to try with that last name, versus Sean Strickland.
Ponzinibbio.
Yeah, that might.
Ponzinibbio?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, but I was like, I've seen him fight too. I just wasn't sure if it was the same guy.
I may just start watching UFC because of the names.
I mean,
there's a lot of great names.
I always remember, this might get a little, I might tell this after the podcast, but the first time I ever watched UFC was Mike Swick fighting somebody, and his nickname's The Quick, and that was, yeah, and then it was on like one of the mashup ones, and then they had a guy that's nickname was Twinkle Toes at one point, and I was just like, oh my god, this is hilarious.
And so that was a review, and we previewed Fight Night 61. That is Sunday, February 22nd. Not Saturday, but Sunday. And that's kind of the week ahead. Is the NFL Combine is over the weekend through the 23rd, so that's Monday.
Plenty of NBA action.
Yeah, college basketball. Like I said, we're hitting the home stretch to March Madness. We're getting near that. Fight Night 61, we mentioned already. What?
So for college basketball as well, the three of us will be doing a bracket.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And we will be going
individually, right?
Yeah, and we'll bring them in and we'll go over them.
Yeah, totally.
And there might be, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Figure out who gets the most right, and maybe we'll do something cool.
Right.
So look forward to that, and obviously UFC Fight Night 61 will be quite impressive. So.
Yep, and then, yeah, so your begging and pleading for feedback didn't get us much. But I'm not saying you should do it again.
Well, let's put it this way. I'm going to beg, plea, borrow, steal, whatever I can.
Don't
feedback,
lie.
Feedback,
no
please, 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 feedback. I would really appreciate it. You can hit me up on Twitter at the Danger Zone MT if you want to give feedback. You can talk trash on me. I will talk trash right back probably. So as Brandon just pointed out, he's having laptop problems, and so if he dropped out in the middle of this episode, we apologize. And
that's okay.
And he might not be able to record for a couple weeks, so you might be stuck with me and Mr. Ginge over here for a couple of weeks.
That's enough.
But with that, this has been the Champions.
Hey, wait a second. You get to plug your Twitter and nobody else does?
Danger Zone.
That's a slight diva move. But yeah, I'm at Kempson Cross, and spell it like it sounds.
But this guy's got like 8 Twitter followers. Nobody cares about
it. I have like 100 and something.
I'm making a Colin Kaepernick joke.
Oh my gosh. Oh. Oh yeah, that was funny. I saw that. But yeah, I mean, that's how everybody should handle Twitter, or even or just ignore them. Actually, that works.
No, I'm gonna start a. If you want to come and talk trash and have a little verbal debate with me, I will encourage it. I will interact with you. I will do whatever. Because
you're basically texting back and forth.
But give us some feedback,
seriously,
please.
Seriously.
I will interact. I like interacting with people.
Right.
I might say some inflammatory things, but hey, that's just me.
Yes. And
but feedback.
Yeah, Brandon is at LeeBrandon523 if you're interested in talking to him. The Twitter itself for the show is at Champion Sports 5. I always feel like I'm getting that wrong, but I think that's right. And yeah, that's right. And then yeah, I mean, we have the email, which is championsportscast@gmail.com.
Feedback, and send it there too,
please.
We just want feedback.
We're on Facebook, Championship Sportscast, and
but we'll save that for next week. We'll talk about the
Cause, no, we won't, because we didn't even hear him.
I know.
We can't hear.
It's really irritating. We need to get out of here. We need to get out of here, because Brandon is talking to us over Skype.
Yeah.
And we forget that I'm forgetting that his laptop lost the recording, so we can't hear him. And I'm having dialogue with him unintentionally because I'm forgetting that he isn't recording.
If there was a fire and we needed to get out of here, we'd be dead. But anyway.
I mean, I'd be okay. I would have just
I'd jump out that window.
No,
it'll be fine. Studio 356 is signing off. So this has been the Championship Sportscast. Y'all come back.